Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Here's Brown for the tie. That's going to be off. And there's the old okie doke. Tyrese Halliburton getting a little help from his Olympic teammate, Derek White, to put this game on ice.
High noon here on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. It's Halloween. My costume's fully deflated.
Keith, you're
but your attitude isn't.
No. Yeah. Your mustache is hanging on pretty good over there.
Mustache, not bad. I do have to take a little break during the break.
Yeah, I can't pop that thing off and then pop it back on.
It's kind of bugging my nose.
How you doing back there, Nick? Is that thing hot?
Nick's hot as hell.
Yeah, it's like 64 back here, and it's still
it's 64. Oh, wow. You guys went way lower than we went in here. I'll turn this one down more because I'm sweating like a maniac over here. How you doing, Lanny?
I'm fine.
Yeah, Lanny's built for it.
My Ovi's a lightweight, nothing too crazy.
That's nice. My buddy is, it's a good look. I kind of forgot about my buddy. I didn't even realize the Chucky connection.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Tying right back in on Halloween. I had no idea.
You like those movies? It's a little bit of an older reference.
It is. Yeah. It is.
My buddy?
My buddy is.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. My buddy is.
Chucky, I guess, would be the same era to your point.
Although they keep bringing him back. Well, there's a lot of Chucky.
Chucky feels more modern to me than my buddy. I do kind of, you said it when you're like, this is what I'm doing for a costume. I remember the theme song or the jingle for my buddy.
Yeah. How's it go?
My buddy and me. Yeah, right? My buddy and me. Something like that. Is that not right?
It's pretty accurate.
And they had
I thought you were going to do the chant from
Chucky. Kid Sister.
Thank you. They had Kid Sister, exactly.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I were my buddy and Kid Sister 2 years ago, maybe.
Oh, nice.
I think I remember the jingle.
There's no other place to hear the grab bag. The Jones and Keefe grab bag. The Jones and Keefe grab bag. The Jones and Keefe grab bag on EEI.
I don't know who that guy was, but he should probably do a My Buddy version.
Get a My Buddy going.
I don't
want to
put a listener to work. But.
No, I got you.
Yeah, I don't want to put a listener to work, but why don't you go ahead and get on that there, guy. of course, we'll take all your grab bag suggestions or, fully produced bits there. Just send them to Keefe at Odyssey. Keefe at Odyssey? Keefe at WEEI.
No, Keefe at WEEI.com.
There you go. Thank
you. That'll get there.
John's in Rhode Island, wants to weigh in indirectly on your top 10 horror movie list. Keefe, here's John Rhode Island. Hello, John.
What do you got?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Thanks for taking my call. Happy Halloween to you guys.
Happy Halloween.
I just wanted to touch on the Conjuring House. I'm a delivery driver, and I've actually delivered to the Conjuring House in Rhode Island. You definitely hold your breath when you walk up to it, but it's actually been purchased by a film company in Japan. And they actually paid or charged people to stay there overnight. I delivered one time, and they showed me a video of someone staying over, them just running out, and then calling in the morning and saying, "Hey, keep our stuff." It's real freaky stuff up there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that. I'm not surprised at all by that story.
Would you stay in the house?
I don't think so.
No. Let me ask you. I've not seen The Conjuring.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, but if I see this house.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a haunted house. Am I going to know it? Am I going to know it when I see this house?
Well, so I don't know what it looks like now. I don't know how much like they kept
if
up
I
with
see it,
it,
I'm like, that's a haunted house, not going anywhere near it, or does it just look like a house?
That's a good question. We should ask John that. I would think it looks kind
of...
It looks a little spooky.
Maybe ask the guy
that would have the question for John. Yeah. Well, you seem like
you think it looks spooky?
It looks
like you had
spooky.
A working knowledge of the home.
Bing to the Conjuring house. It looks a little like run down.
Oh, my God. If this is what it looks like, Jones... Right here?
Yeah, I'm not going in that thing.
That Larry,
look at that yard space, though.
Yeah, it's, what is that, a couple acres?
Backyard's pretty legit.
That is a fixer-upper.
It could use some stain, but...
You're going to need a ride-on mower.
I'll put up with a ghost for a wiffle ball field like that.
Oh, it's a good point. That probably comes at like a nice discount there. Yeah, what else you got? What other features of the home?
Conjuring home. I mean, it's old.
Stone wall.
Is that a barn?
It looked like a barn. Oh, yeah. Shed? Barn? What is that?
There's also
big shed.
There's also a tree where they hung a witch.
Yeah.
That's out there. Creepy tree.
Sturdy branches, though, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, but you get in there, you can do some glamping, it looks like it says.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something to it.
Show buying opportunity, maybe.
We get in there.
Yeah. Okay.
$28.25 to get in. That's not too bad.
$28.25?
Yeah.
How'd they land on that?
I don't know.
$28.25.
$28.25 to do what? Just to walk around in there?
I guess.
I thought he said they were charging people to stay.
Well, both probably. I think you can have a house tour and then maybe pay extra.
The day tour is $25. Yeah. The extended day tour is $45.
Hello.
Overnight?
It's GHO investigate. I don't know what that means. $130.
Is that like ghost hunting?
Ghost hunting. Man. Yeah, I'm not going there.
No, thank you.
Look, they even put the Raggedy Ann doll on there. So The Conjuring kicked off that whole series of movies, and one of them is Annabelle. And so the Annabelle character is in the movie. And basically, in real life, it was just a Raggedy Ann doll.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of changed it for the movie. But if you go back in like the real history of it, and so they put one just for funsies in there.
Yeah.
Just to scare you even more.
No, thank you.
Yep, pass.
So it's Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. It's Halloween, obviously. We've been talking about it all day long. We've also been talking Celtics, and we'll get into the Bruins here coming up on a Bruins Thursday. Andrew Raycroft is going to join us at 12:30. Get his thoughts on what should be a good matchup for the Bees tonight, Carolina Hurricanes. They always like facing them. Just quickly on the Celtics, since we played the clip last night. How much did it bother you they lost that game last night? Is it more bothersome they lost? Is it more encouraging they came back? How do you view it?
I actually am going to take the more encouraging route because I thought this was one of those classic, like, all right, you started the season 5-0. You're on the road. Team on the other side is playing pretty well. You're down big late third quarter. Give it up. Like, I think teams, even good teams probably in the past have done that, where they're like, all right, not our night. We'll come back next game. They got two with Charlotte coming up, which they should just be able to roll the balls out and win those ones. So they're like, not our night. Siakam's playing well, whatever. But no, they kept staying with it. And the next thing you know, they tie the game. They force overtime. So they came storming back. I mean, they were down big in that third quarter, and they just kept chipping away, hitting threes. They outplayed them in the fourth quarter. It was the only quarter they outplayed them, but they outplayed them in the fourth quarter. And I think if you're the Pacers, you're probably thinking, all right, we got a win over the Celtics. But like, what the hell happened? Like, we were cruising to a victory, and then the next thing you know, we had to fight for our lives in overtime.
So, look, I am encouraged by their comeback. Like, they didn't just roll
I didn't see that coming. Even as good as they are, I was like, all right, this one, they're probably just done.
I'll give Scal some credit. Scal and Drew Carter were annoying me a little bit on the broadcast, but I will give Scal credit for this. He said late in the third quarter, he's like, they're not out of this. Cut it down to, I think he said 11, 12, 13. They got it down to 14.
Yeah.
He also was like, I'm very encouraged by this Tatum lineup because, and it was like, I said this out loud to the TV. I'm sitting there by myself watching the game, and I'm like, you like this lineup, Scal? It's Tatum and Hauser. And, oh, God, I forget who else even at that point in time. Pritchard.
Queta? Was he out there?
No, I don't think he was out there yet. So it was whatever lineup they had at the end of the third. He's like, I like this lineup. I'm like, how do you like this lineup?
Right.
And his logic was, you're saving everybody else for the stretch run. I mean, you're saving Jalen, and you can bring all these guys back. And if you can chip away now, you'll have your full lineup ready to go down the stretch in the fourth quarter. That turned to be somewhat prophetic, but also Mazzulla ended up riding this hot lineup with Namus Keita out there, which I get that.
I was like, okay.
Okay, Stevens used to do this all the time. Something's rolling, just stick with it. I didn't like that he went back to it in overtime. Like, you stole it, you got back to the game, you forced overtime. Now you go to Horford and Drew Holiday. Those guys didn't play in OT. And it's probably minutes management and things like this. And Keita had some big rebounds in overtime. I didn't like sticking with that lineup. I would have gone back to my best lineup for overtime, just to nitpick our guy Joe Mazzulla there for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not to confuse him with a horror villain.
No.
But the two issues for me, they shot 57 threes. They shot it at 33%. They made 19 of them. So to me, that's too high of a number. I know the game went to overtime.
Yep.
But when you're not lighting it up, they were lighting it up game one against New York. It's like, okay, I can see that. You shoot 62, you're making everything. I get it. You're making one out of every three. I think analytics would tell you that's worth it. But I don't agree personally that that's worth it. It's not worth it for Jaylen Brown to shoot 11 threes when he made one. It's not worth it, I don't think, Tatum to shoot 18 threes. Those two combined for 29 threes.
Well, part of it, too, was overtime for Tatum.
Yeah.
He only took four shots, he took four shots in overtime, which was more than anybody else on the team, but they were all threes and he missed them all.
Yeah, and you'd hear it on the broadcast over and over. He's taking his guy out on the dance floor.
is a line Drew Carter likes.
Brick.
Yeah, how about he takes him to the hoop?
Yeah, he could also do that.
Don't take him on the dance floor. Take him to the hoop. And Tatum, oddly enough, forced overtime with a three. The Pacers didn't shoot a lot of threes, but ironically enough, they win the game on a three. Siakam hits the big three-pointer that gives them the victory. But Indiana shot 38, and this is a trend. Terp pointed this out before the game yesterday. Terp's like, it will be a contrast in styles.
Yeah.
And last night, for one game, Indiana's style won out. They shot 38 threes. You shot, what was it, 57?
57, yeah.
In the game. And again, this is a trend line for the season. Threes attempted. The Celtics averaged 52 a game. The Pacers averaged 32, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So only six teams shoot fewer than they do.
Oh, yeah.
So
they're the
seventh fewest in the league. They're 25, or 23, rather,
you know what's odd
in the
too?
League.
Halliburton, for his career, shoots a good percentage. It doesn't look pretty, but he had the three.
His shot looks gross.
The three that he made in overtime, I thought he might, it was like, when it left his hands, I'm like, is that an air ball?
Yeah.
And then it like went in, and you're like, ugh.
A lot of arc on that thing.
He's not shooting well from three this season. It's early. But for his career, he's actually pretty good. But yeah, they hit a couple of big threes in overtime, which is kind of funny. Like, so as much as that's not the Pacers game, one of the things that separated them in the overtime was the Siakam and the Halliburton three.
And so the Pacers,
no, my bigger issue is what you've sort of hit on, is just the overall defense.
Yeah,
because I think the threes, like, I've come to just expect it, and like, that's what it's going to be. The 1 for 11, like, on an individual level, annoys me. Now, one of those was at the very end of the game, which he needed to take, but still, okay, whatever, that would have been 1 for 10. That part's a little bit different. Like, if you don't have it that night, maybe somebody else has it, or maybe that's when you take it to the hoop. But I feel like giving up a $1.35 to the Pacers is the bigger issue to me than taking 57 threes.
And it was 124 in regulation, right?
Okay.
So it's overtime.
Still,
you go, okay, 124 points to the Pacers?
Yeah, surprising.
And the Pacers shot it 48% from the floor. They shot almost 40% from three. Now, you look at the Celtics' defense, you know, points per game and field goal percentage, they're kind of middle of the pack to even in the 20s, I think, in field goal percentage. They do defend the three relatively well on the year. So they defend the three well. They knock down a lot of threes. Clearly, that's something they believe in.
Yeah.
I just think their defenses look shaky, and you know I've said this after a lot of these games. I said it when they blew out the Knicks. I'm like, if you have any gripe or nitpick, it's shot selection and how skewed they are towards the three.
Yeah.
And it's their defense. Their defense, to me, has not looked up to snuff all year long. And last night in particular, the Pacers are getting a lot of easy buckets and points in the paint, and that's an issue for me. And furthermore, you could tell me, well, Porzingis is going to come back.
Yeah, he's going to help the defense.
Well, yeah, when he's out there.
Yeah, I'm not banking on him.
How do
I'm
you
just
know
saying when he does return.
How do you know he's going to be out there in the postseason?
He might be for like half of it.
He might be for a couple of games, and then you'll lose him again.
He gets out there for a few.
You can't rely on him whatsoever. So if you're hoping that Porzingis is going to save the defense, I'll tell you, I don't think that's reliable. So look, if you ask me the question, will the Celtics be a better defensive team when it matters in the postseason? My answer is probably.
Yeah.
But I don't know that for sure. They have not played good defense. Or the defense they played a year ago, they haven't played it in the first five games. They just haven't.
I think that's one thing Mazzulla is still kind of searching for right now. Like, what is his defensive lineup? Like, if they just need stops. Now, you can't just, obviously, Tatum and Brown are going to still be out there. They can play defense. They're obviously your best offensive players. Derek White's been the one guy. I mean, he's blocking shots. He still looks like, you know, an all-NBA defensive player in Derek White. But I think their other issue is, all right, who's the big? You can't really rely on Horford. I think it stretches, maybe even the playoffs. Like, I think the Horford minutes will be better defensively there. You can kind of just focus on that. But the other guys, I think they're still kind of, is it Quaida? Is it Tillman? Like, Hauser's obviously not a defensive guy. So I think he's still kind of looking for that a little bit right now.
Yeah, fair. So you can jump in. 617-779-7937. Any concerns for the Celtics following their first loss of the year last night? No one's freaking out. No one's saying they won't win Banner 19. But they have had some flaws. I think shot selection and their defense were prominently featured in that game last night. Or were you like Keith, you're more encouraged by the comeback? Again, you can jump in. 617-779-7937. We're going to talk to Andrew Raycroft, the Razor, on a Bruins Thursday coming up at 12:30. So mark that down. But as promised, Keith, you got a little scoopage on the Bruins? Hashtag scoops, Keith?
Yeah, that's right. And we were talking about yesterday a little bit, and you were kind of like asking me, anything on Marchand?
Yeah, you got anything,
right?
On that Marchand extension?
No, I don't. I have nothing on Marchand.
So that's not the scoop.
That's not the scoop.
Okay.
Here's the scoop. And you were sniffing around this. Credit to you and your sniffer for sniffing around this, because I was like, I don't know about this.
Well, yours is all clogged up with that mustache
over
there.
I can't smell a thing. Except for this awful mustache. No, you were kind of on this, and then after the show, I got word that this is legitimate. Jim Montgomery is on the hot seat. The hot seat.
Mm.
If things don't get turned around, I think he's done. I think they need to turn it around. He'll be the first casualty, I guess, of a really slow start. It sounds like the top of the front office is very, very frustrated with how the first 10 games of the season have gone. And somebody needs to be held accountable for that. And now I don't know what turning it around means. I don't know if that means win 5 in a row or win 4 out of 5 or whatever. But it sounds like if things don't get better, Jim Montgomery is going to be the one that pays for it.
Okay. So Jim Montgomery,
hot.
The seat is hot.
It's the hottest seat going.
And it's getting hotter. Let me ask a few questions here.
Yeah, please.
Do you have any understanding on a timeline? Are we talking like days, weeks, month? Like, what are we talking for?
No, I don't know. A month seems long. And this is not me reading between the lines, yep. But it just feels like there is a sense of urgency. So I would say that.
And it's been communicated to Montgomery?
Yeah, I believe
he's
so.
He's very aware of the hotness of his hot seat.
Correct.
And you say it goes to the highest.
Yeah. Top down.
The top level of the front office is what I think you said. Even
top.
Even above that?
I think the tippity top. The top of this thing is where the anger has started from.
So the owner's not happy with the start and Jim Montgomery. Interesting. So the hottest of hot seats
Piping
for
hot.
Jim Montgomery. Turn it around or else.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
It's like the center of the sun right now, that hot seat.
Hashtag Scoops Keefe.
Yeah.
With some info here on your Boston Bruins. Do you think it goes okay for them tonight against Carolina? That's always a good matchup for them.
Yeah, it's just in time to take on the Carolina Hurricanes. Yeah, no, I mean, looking ahead, so it's Carolina, Philly, who you just got shut out 2-0, then Seattle, Toronto, Calgary. So that's kind of a five-game stretch. I would think they would have to, I mean, my guess now, what do you need? Points in 3 or 4 of those games, probably.
Oh.
Maybe wins.
No, you're speculating, but okay. You're the one who has the information that the seat is hot, and now you're saying turn around the next 3 or 4 games.
You're basically playing 500 hockey right now. And I know that term isn't because of the overtime wins and all that stuff. It's a little bit different, but that if that's not good enough, if you keep that trend going, well, guess what? Still not good enough, and now more time is gone by.
Look,
so
Scoops Keefe has the info, so the seat is hot. But it does make sense. They're 4-5-1. They're in last
place.
But
also, look at how Montgomery's acted.
Oh, well, that too.
That feels like a hot seat guy.
Oh, for sure. So what he's doing with his lines, you mean, and things like this, shoving Brad Montgomery Brad Marchand the other night. So here were his lines the other day at practice. We talked about the jumbled lines yesterday. Beecher, Zaka, Pasternak, Marchand, Lindholm, Kastelic, Jones, Coyle, Koepke, Frederick, Patra, Brazo. So it's like he shuffled the whole thing.
Yeah.
He's moving around the one line that was working, the fourth line, and mixing it in on all the other lines. That is reflective of a coach who's feeling the pressure.
Kind of grasping at it a little bit.
Freaking out on his captain a few weekends ago.
The stuff he's representative of that post-game.
And just knowing what we know about the Jacobs family.
Yeah.
They want to make the postseason. They want a postseason gate. The Bruins are in last place. They're 4-5-1.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trending towards making the postseason. If you don't turn it around, you're going to pay for it with his job. All of that checks out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the latest from hashtag Scoops Keefe on the Bruins and Jim Montgomery's future in Boston.
Seat.
Magma.
Hot route, by the way. Andrew Raycroft's going to move to 1240. So he's not going to join us next. We just got that into the news desk. So he will join us this hour, but not next. Just what we've been relayed.
News going on with the Bruins?
Situation is
maybe
fluid.
He's got to react to some news.
Maybe he's interviewing for the head coaching job.
Okay. We didn't have
a caller yesterday suggest they should move on.
We did have a caller saying that. Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of callers, you can jump in on the Bruins and the Celtics. What do you think of Keith's scoop there? What do you think of the Celtics last night? 617-779-7937. We can get back into Drake May, the latest on him as well.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's the kind of thing where, you'd like to get them back, but typically, most players don't make it back for the next week. And so it's just, if you look at it, I think the average return to play is about 8 days. And I think if you got a young quarterback, you're going to be even more careful than normal. So I know he was listed as limited today, and I know there's a chance that he could make it back, and I know they'll give him every opportunity. But just on its surface, my general reaction would be, I probably would be a little surprised if he did make it back and clear through, but every player is different with every concussion protocol.
Adam Schefter yesterday on WEEI Afternoons. Not a lot of updates there, not a lot of specifics, but I'd agree with his takeaway that most players, you're probably not playing this week, never mind a young quarterback who is also the future of your franchise. Now, my stance remains, if he's cleared, play him. Like, that's how I feel about it. I don't think he's going to clear concussion protocol, despite being in phase three yesterday, and I don't know if there's an update to that today. I've not seen it, if there is. Despite what Alex Van Pelt said about Drake May, that he's encouraged by how he's coming along, encouraged that he could play. I just encouraged and being hopeful that he's going to play. That doesn't mean he's actually going to play in this game. And that would be my one reminder, and I would skew towards Schefter there, who certainly wasn't leading you to believe he's going to suit up this weekend.
Yeah, probably take it. Well, first of all, he might just not clear protocol. Then that takes the decision out of Mayo's hands. And it's like, forget, he can't do anything. But there's also a difference. Like, if he passes the protocol on Friday, Saturday, or like Sunday morning, like, all right, what did the week of practice look like? Do you feel confident with your team doing that? And this also isn't an example of, oh, you got to turn to Joe Milton. It's like, no, you're turning to a guy that you wanted to start the first
your
five games.
Week one starter.
Whether you or I wanted that is not the point.
The team liked him.
Yeah, he's played. He's taken more snaps than Drake May has. Mm-hmm. So the easy decision would be, all right, let's put him out there against Tennessee, not a very good team. See if we can squeak out a win somehow, and then ramp it up week 10. Hopefully he's cleared the protocol. He can practice 100% of the reps going next week, and then he's out there in Chicago. I think that's sort of what you can kind of hope for.
Yeah.
And it'll suck for this week. You know, it won't be as entertaining, won't be as fun to watch, whatever. But you still have a bunch of games to play. Knock on wood, he's able to come in, play the final, whatever it is, 8 games, and go from there.
Yeah. So to me, I think that's a realistic scenario that he'll be out there for the Bears game. And I don't think it's a long-term thing. That's why I don't get the crowd that's like, oh, they got him hurt again, and this is what they did, and, oh, you can't trust him. He's been hurt now 3 different times. He fell on his shoulder against Houston. He has whatever that knee issue is that he popped up on the injury report with, and now this. Like, this feels very short-term. That's not what anybody was talking about. We were talking about saving him from himself. It wasn't related to the offensive line. It was taking off and running. I am not of the crowd that Jerod Mayo and even Alex Van Pelt is saying, yeah, well, he's got to protect himself better. I think it's one of those things that are unfortunate, but it does happen in a contact sport like the NFL. He should be out there for the Chicago game. So if he clears, let's say Sunday morning, Keith, and yeah. I don't know how the timing works with all these various stages, but let's say you get cleared on Sunday morning. I'd play him the second he's cleared. That's me. It's not a call about whether or not he can learn the game plan, prepare for the week against Tennessee. Those might be things they factor in. I wouldn't. You're cleared, you play. That's how I would attack it. I have no idea how they're going to attack it. And my best guess is, especially after listening to Schefter, you probably got to wait another week.
Yeah, and I think quarterback's obviously different. We hit on that a little bit earlier this week. Like, if Polk is cleared right before the game, all right, you can still throw him out there. He's not going to play 100% of plays. He probably wouldn't play 100% of plays anyway,
right,
even if he's fully healthy and practiced every day. So if you want to get him out there because he's finally cleared it, fine. May's a little bit different, especially, you know, yesterday if he was limited to the 30-minute and couple of passes degree. If that's the same thing today and tomorrow, I could see them kind of going that other way. This isn't like, it's not the be all end all. It's not a must win by any means. There's still plenty of games. Like, he could still end the season with, what would that be, 11 starts?
Yep.
Somewhere there? Not bad. You know, rather than like forcing him out there to 12, if you don't think he's fully prepared for it, right? Like, if you felt like those practice reps would have mattered and now you don't have that and you think you're giving him even the slightest disadvantage, I'd wait.
Yeah, so I get all that. And when he comes back, I'm curious. Do you think they rein in the running? Like, it sounds like they're going to rein in his running, Keith.
Well, I don't think they're going to call many runs. I don't think they have called many runs.
I'm not sure they've had even one designed run.
But
yeah, maybe I'm missing one. But in 3 starts, I don't think he's had a designed run.
Maybe. But that's tough to take out of the player. If you're like, hey, dude, don't run. He's like, okay, I have two 320-pound guys running at me. All the receivers are covered. You want me to eat it? So that might even happen where maybe he throws the ball away once, but then like just the ingrained football player in him is going to start running again. I mean, and I think he's done a good job. It's not like he's like they literally had to teach Tua how to slide. Tua didn't know how to slide. They like brought him to like a baseball field and they're like, let's slide. They don't have to do that with Drake May. I feel like he's slid most of the time that he's or scored a touchdown every time he's kind of gotten going.
Look, I want him to be mobile and run. I think that's part of what I loved about him as a prospect. It's part of what I like about a lot of the top flight quarterbacks in today's NFL. The mobility is something that I think you borderline need.
Yeah, who doesn't run now?
I mean, very, very, very
few guys.
It's funny, like,
one guy I would think was Burrow, and then the other week he had like that 40-yard touchdown run or whatever.
Herbert ripped off like a 50-yard run last week.
Herbert can run.
Like,
he's a hoss.
Goff doesn't really scoot.
No, that's a good one.
Yeah, Goff's a good one.
But like,
not many.
But of the true like top guys,
yeah,
most of them are pretty mobile. I mean, Stroud's not super mobile. Maybe that's one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like that about him, and sure. I want him to do that. And my fear would be they are going to do what you just said.
Yep.
They won't call any design runs for him, but they're also going to tell him, yeah, throw it away or do what Brissett does and, you know, drop to the ground and take a sack. Like, we don't want you doing what makes you an elite prospect and a top-flight quarterback prospect. I want that mobility. I want him on the run. And just because he suffered a concussion on, I don't want to call it a freak play, but something I definitely don't blame him for. I don't think he was putting himself in harm's way.
That could have been a penalty. That could have been an illegal hit is what got him hurt.
And again, it was the hit from the backside, not the hit that he saw coming in as he was going to the ground.
Right.
I hope they don't take that away. I hope they're not encouraging him not to. I just think listening to Van Pelt today and Mayo yesterday, or I'm sorry, on Monday, I think there's a chance they start limiting that to his game, which I think would be a problem.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason why, Keith, when we talk about Jerod Mayo, is he ready to coach? Is he the right fit for a young quarterback? Alex Van Pelt, is he ready to be a play caller for a young quarterback? If those are their fears, I don't think that's the right spot for him to develop.
No, I don't like that at all. And that's also one of the concerns, and I think big picture, anytime you look at a young quarterback and we go through all, and this is what we've done for the last 6 months, is we've looked at all the young quarterbacks that played and whether you think they got broken or whether they improved and whether they were good with that team or whether they were good somewhere else. Bottom line is if a guy really struggles and he ends up getting good, it's because there's a change at coordinator or a change at head coach. Like Jared Goff's a great example. Jared Goff looked like a bust with Jeff Fisher and whoever their offensive coordinator was. Then Sean McVay shows up, and you're like, oh, he's pretty good. And then Ben Johnson now with the Lions. Oh, this guy's pretty good. So with Drake May, like a lot of it is also going to come down on the shoulders of Van Pelt and Mayo. But it seems like he's already passed the early tests where you're like, all right, he's already good. Now, is the play calling good? Are the receivers good? Is the O-line good? Like,
not only is he already good, I think he's gotten better every week.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, he looked like he was in store for a monster day against the Jets. And so, I take that back. I kind of like his Houston game better than Jacksonville, but at least he didn't turn it over in the Jacksonville game. Last week, I think he was on pace for by far his best game. He was looking super mobile.
Taquan Thornton catches one pass. You're talking about like 70-something yards and like a couple of drives.
He was only 3 for 6, but
he should have been
Thornton drop what would have been a 40. Yeah, what would have been a 40-yard pass, plus there was another drop in there. Exactly.
Yeah.
So he looked great. He looked locked in. Not only has he looked ready to play, he's looking better week over week over week. Yeah, that's super promising, and I hope they don't rein him in too much because they're fearful of this concussion. You want to protect him. I get that. But you don't want to take away what makes him potentially great.
Not only that, but the way this offense is set up, if you remove that, where else are you going? Right, like I don't trust the receivers to get open on every play. I don't trust the receivers to make a lot of contested catches. I don't trust after the first 2 weeks the running game, like the running backs. I mean, to like carry them. So if you remove some of the Drake May scrambles over the last couple of weeks, like you're losing out on first downs. I mean, you're obviously missing out on that one touchdown, but like you're missing out on a lot of what he can do to help overcome for the lack of talent around him right now. Like, if you take, that's like having him play with, like, one arm tied behind his back.
No, it's true. I mean, lost in the win last week, and Ramondre Stevenson had 2 touchdowns, and he had the go-ahead touchdown. I mean, he has not been productive or good.
No.
Really, since the very beginning. Like, he was a monster the first game against Cincinnati.
What do you think that comes down to? He hasn't had a ton of opportunity. Some of it's been just the way the game has gone. There's been some blowouts in there. Obviously, he's fumbled 4 times, so he's got, you know, we joke about they didn't really punish him. He did miss a series here and there because of it. Is it just the line? Is it the defense? Like, why has he been so much worse?
Well, I think some of it is he played most of the games with Brissett, and he was the main weapon. So maybe he caught the Bengals a little
20-plus carries.
Yeah, he was maybe caught the Bengals a little off guard the first week where he went 25 for 120 and a touchdown in that game. But then it was under 4 yards a carry against Seattle, but decent, 81 yards on 21 carries. Did nothing against the Jets, barely did anything against the Niners. He fumbled and lost the fumble in both those games. Mm-hmm. I guess he was okay against the Dolphins, 89 yards and a touchdown. Then he missed Drake May's debut against Houston. He did nothing against Jacksonville. And last week he got in the end zone twice, but it was 20 carries for 48 yards. I mean, that's not the weapon that we thought he would be earlier in the year. That's not a top 10 running back that Gerard Mayo talks about him over and over and over again. So to your point, you can't really count on Stevenson the way we thought maybe you could the first week or two of the year. So if you take that away from May, that is less production and less first downs and less extended drives and more pressure on your defense because they can't get it done with Ramondre. And by the way,
yeah,
Antonio Gibson hasn't done anything since the beginning of the year either.
Well, it's weird because at a time where the offensive line seems to be playing better, the running backs have been worse. Like, and part of it is the carries have gone way down. I get that. But they haven't been able to establish much. And so what is that? Like, maybe they're just better at pass blocking? I don't know. But it seems like the effectiveness of, yeah, Gibson's disappeared completely.
Yeah, what was his great game? Seattle?
Yeah, it was early. Yeah, I think it was the Seattle game where he was really good.
This is when we had like a 45-yard catch.
Oh, right. He's done nothing after that.
He led the team in rushing in week two where he had 96 yards against Seattle. He also led the team in rushing in week three with 29 yards.
Nice.
Against the Jets.
I guess his game against Miami was decent. It wasn't as good as Ramondre that game, but 52 yards on 6 carries. Long at 24.
Yeah, no. Like, that's pretty decent. Take that.
But then the last couple of games.
Half on one run, but you'll take it.
19 on 13 carries against Houston. 4 on 3 against Jacksonville. 7 on 5 against the Jets. Like, their running game, you're right, has completely, outside of May, disappeared.
The last 3 games for Gibson, he's under 2 yards a carry.
Nice.
Not nice.
Not what you're looking for.
Not going to get it done.
So,
not much.
Drake May, I wouldn't expect him this week. When he comes back, is he limited in any way? Is the coaching staff reining him in? And should they? You can jump in on that. 617-779-7937. Scoops Keefe tells us that Jim Montgomery's hot seat is getting hotter by the day.
It's piping hot.
The owner, Jeremy Jacobs, not pleased. And we're talking, if you had to guess, the next few games.
If
you don't turn that around,
you're done.
Montgomery out the door. So that's Scoops Keefe reporting on that earlier today here on a Bruins Thursday on WEEI, I think. We're going to check in with the Razor.
The Razor.
Andrew Raycroft for all the latest on the Bruins next.
Guys aren't comfortable right now with feeling the puck. You know, the old adage, they're squeezing it tight. And it's mental.
Now, if that was Gerard Mayo talking about Jalen Polk.
Yeah.
Jalen Polk would say, I don't have mental problems, is what he would say.
No, I don't have mental problems.
No, I don't have mental problems. I don't think anyone was accusing you of that.
No, they're squeezing it.
That was Jim Montgomery. He's saying the issue with the Bruins in their head is what he's saying.
All right.
And, well, it turns out if you can't get things straightened out, and this is a guy who's, shoving his captain, this is a guy who is shuffling his lines in what feels like a bit of a panic yesterday at practice. We'll see what those lines look like tonight against Carolina. It's a guy who could pay for it with his job and do it in very short order. And with more on that, we're joined here on a Bruins Thursday by Andrew Raycroft and Nesson. He's brought to you by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning. The name to know when your drains don't flow. What's up, Razor? Happy Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween. Hopefully everyone's ready to go trick-or-treating tonight. Perfect weather, right?
You better believe it.
It's going to be lovely out there. Yeah.
Too hot for me.
I don't know if you've been following along, Razor. I'd imagine not. But Keith is Raleigh Fingers today.
That's right. Hall of Famer and 4-time Rolaids AIDS Relief Man of the Year.
He's got like a real nice fake mustache going on. Wiggy chastised my costume earlier today because I didn't go as a recognizable individual like Raleigh Fingers.
No.
I'm like a rocket blasting off. That has since deflated since the start of the show. My batteries have run out on my costume.
Yeah, it's a tough look.
Yeah, so I'm just a deflated rocket right now. But yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on the Bruins as we're out trick-or-treating with the kids. Keith said earlier today, very hot seat for Jim Montgomery from what he's hearing. Does he have to turn things around to keep his job?
Oh, right out of the gate. I mean, I think the team needs to turn around anyways. I think we talked about this maybe last week or the week before and how players and coaches and, this is pro hockey and they don't wake up worrying about their jobs. They're worried about wins and losses. And that's where this group is. They're trying to figure out how to score more goals. It's been a problem offensively, how to get a few of the guys going who haven't had good starts to the season. And They're up against a tough test down here in Carolina.
Do you see or hear a difference in Jim Montgomery compared to the last couple of years? Because we were pointing out how obviously they had the record-breaking regular season 2 years ago, started the year 9-1. Last year they started the year 9-0-1, even after losing Bergeron and Krejci. Now this year 4-5-1 to start, and you know, we were just playing some of his post-game comments coming back. But have you noticed a difference in him, the way he's sort of gone about things?
I noticed a big difference between year one and year two, the record-setting year, and then going into last year without Bergeron, without Krejci, and a little bit of a leadership void. I thought he was more outgoing, more aggressive, more demonstrative at times. I think he laid into guys a lot, even through that 9-0-1 record. I think he was setting a different tone than what he had the first year, and I think that tone has you know, basically stayed the same going into this season. Of course, it's probably a little bit of a louder voice and a little bit more focused on, because they are 4-5-1 and not 9-0-1. That's a difference, and certainly that'll just change the narrative and also change what you're watching from a coach.
So we mentioned he flipped his lines yesterday at Bruins practice. I guess we'll see what they ultimately are here tonight. But he's basically mixing his fourth line in, which has been a good line, throughout the other three lines and trying to shake the team awake. Do you expect to see those lines tonight? And what'd you think of them?
Yeah, I do expect that. I talked to him this morning. I am down here in Carolina. So it's they are going to split up the fourth line and move them to other lines to try and build the momentum that those guys have built and bring it to someone else and get it going that way. So he talked about not really changing the lines too much in game. But he did last game and got a little bit of a bump in the second period. Felt like they had a good 6 minutes at the end of the second, had a bad third, which he said a vanilla third was his words. And he's looking to kind of move those guys around to bring what they've done so far this season to different lines and different pairings.
How do you feel about the roster this season compared to the previous couple? Because I've heard people complaining about the roster, and then I look at it and say, Pastrnak, Marchand, Coyle, Zacha, McAvoy, Frederick were your leading scorers a year ago, and Swayman, it was obviously one of your two goalies. They're all back. I feel like the roster might not be like, oh, look, that's a Stanley Cup wagon, but I feel like the roster is better than what they've shown. How do you view it?
I agree 100%. I mean, I thought the roster was bringing in Lindholm, bringing in Zadorov, building up the back end the way they did. I thought 3 weeks ago, or October 1st, 2024 to October 1st, 2023, the lineup was much better, so much better. And it was because of the way that Frederick and the way that Geeky took a step last season. You thought that would continue, and it hasn't to this point. So I don't see it being a roster issue. I see it being Zacha, McAvoy, Elias Lindholm, Frederick, Coyle. They have 2 points between them in the last 6-7 games. So that's, you know, I think that's just kind of player performance, and they've all kind of hit a cold spot at the start of the season right now, and it's up to them to turn around and prove that it is just a cold spell and not a trend and not what they are as players anymore.
Andrew Raycroft and Nesson here on a Bruins Thursday, Jones and Keefe on WEEI. I'm curious about the report this week, or maybe over the weekend, that the Bruins were working on an extension for Brad Marchand. That was from Elliot Friedman. Marchand denied it. Marchand said there's nothing in the works. Why would the Bruins be looking to extend him now? I love Marchand, but he's not producing. The team's not playing great. I don't really get the urgency. Why are they looking at getting that done now?
Well, because he's a Hall of Famer and one of your best players and a guy who's your team captain and a guy who had 3 surgeries this year and was going to get the benefit of the doubt at least probably until the middle of November. Now,
wasn't their approach with Chara and Bergeron and guys like didn't they wait on those guys? Like, why the urgency with him where there wasn't with some of those other guys?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where the urgency is coming from. I mean, obviously, I don't think Brad's sweating it too much, and I don't think the Bruins are either. I think when you talk about Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron, they made a decision to go year to year, and that's where they were in their careers, and they didn't want to make decisions. If Brad Marchand knows he wants to play two more years, then you go and get that deal done. And it's probably pretty easy, considering he's been here for 13, 14 years now. So I think, you know, if Brad wants to sign, it'll get done. It'll be team friendly, I'm sure. It'll be fair. It'll be an easy kind of situation. And I don't think there is urgency. I think it's just Elliot Friedman needs to have 32 thoughts on his podcast, and he heard about Brad. That's one of them.
It's a lot of thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot. You're pushing yourself in a corner.
32 thoughts a week.
Too much. So many.
32 a week is a lot, right?
That's way too much. Now, one of the big differences this year compared to last is the goalie situation. Rather than splitting it with Swayman and Ullmark, you now have Swayman getting the majority of the games. He's played 7 of the games so far. Corposalo has played 3. What do you think of that split overall? And also, I'm curious just your thoughts on the 3 games that we've seen from Corposalo.
Well, I thought last game he was great against Philadelphia. He was huge in the first 10 minutes of the game. He made 3 great saves. And then I liked the fact that he was battling all the way to the end. He made a couple breakaway saves late in the third period when the team was pushing down at the other end. So I liked his game, and I think that 7-3 split is basically what we're going to see over the 80-game season. That puts Jeremy Swayman in that 55% or 55-game mark, and that puts Corposalo in the 25-game mark. So that's essentially what you're going to see if everyone stays healthy. And Corposalo has gotten better in each of the games he's played, which is really important, and he's been able to – he's 1-2, but the game he lost, he more than did enough to keep the team in it. So I've liked the goaltending. I think that's the least of their worries right now. It's all about offense and all about them scoring more goals.
Now, you're a fan of Halloween, Razor, I've heard in the past. I've heard you, was it you and Greshke, if you were talking to him about the tickle trunk? Was that?
Oh, yeah, we talked tickle trunks.
Yeah.
Find out what's in the tickle trunk.
Yeah, so you take that on the road with you?
No, I didn't. It's my kids are really not happy with me, especially my daughter. Yeah, like our house club. Really enjoys that. Yeah, exactly. Get used to it. Yeah. So I would. We have a lot of costumes for me to put on if I was at home tonight, but down here I'm all business. So I am hoping the crowd is a little lively and maybe Philadelphia when I get in later tonight.
Favorite candy? Favorite Halloween candy that you have?
I'm pretty plain with I like a Snickers or M&M's. Sure. Nothing. I'm more of a chocolate guy, I think, at this point in my career. I think earlier in my glory days, I was a Skittles guy or a Starburst, but I'm almost getting a little bit too old for those. Yep. I'm pretty standard. You guys?
Yeah. You know what's funny? Jones and I agree on Reese's Pieces.
I like a Reese's Pieces. Really anything Reese's, but
or cups. Yeah,
I like
whatever.
A Pieces.
All good.
Are there any
PCs are hard to find now?
They for sure are.
On Halloween, especially
Halloween bags.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Yeah,
for sure not.
They are the best. They are delicious.
You got to run into like a 7-Eleven, grab those. Yeah, those are hard to find in a Halloween bag for sure. Are there any are there any Canadian candies we should like? Is there a different candy when you're trick or treating north of the border?
Okay, so we're gonna do this, right? We're really good.
I'm asking.
How much time do we have?
So much time you need.
Yeah. About this. Yeah. Another, as Montgomery is a Canadian like myself, we went through the candies, and it's much different, and it's a much better selection. You wouldn't believe it. Yes, I swear, I would not lie to you guys. You would think that American candy bars are the best, and they have the market cornered. But
Poutine Reese's Cups.
Yeah, we have so many different ones. We've got Coffee Crisp. You got to put that in the freezer. That's as good as it gets. You've got Crispy Crunch. You've got Aero. You've got Caramel Bars. You've got Wonder Bars. All 5 of those I would put ahead of any Snickers bar.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. Wow.
Nice try. I got my U.S. passport.
Take his passport.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. I'll try. My parents will come down. I'll try and get you guys a little taste.
I think I have had Aero before.
Yeah, real good.
Yeah, is it a yellow? I'll look it up now. Is it a yellow wrapper? He's like, no.
It can be. Well, no, it's kind of white, but it does have some yellow. Arrow is like, it's just basically chocolate with like holes in it. It's like really light chocolate.
Go on.
It's like a really light chocolate bar.
Yeah.
I mean, or the yellow one's a caramel bar. That's the one with the caramel inside the little cup. That's delicious.
Okay. How come they haven't made their way down here? No, I feel like every movie star comes down from Canada, you know this. And they live here.
Razor, you know this. There's so Canada, chips are very different in Canada as well, Keith.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, of course. Well, very, ketchup chips, all-dressed
all
chips.
All-dressed? Oh, I love it. I love an all-dressed chip. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you got, just
all-dressed chip is unbelievable. Yeah, ketchup, I'm not a ketchup guy.
The places
a lot
in Montreal
Canadian
I went to were not all-dressed.
Yeah, exactly. Something else that hasn't been transported quite down the same way from Canada.
All right. Well, Razor, we appreciate the time. Best of luck to the Bruins, and hopefully Monty makes a trip back with you.
Happy Halloween, guys.
Thank you, Razor.
The Razor.
Very good.
On a Bruins Thursday. How about that? Just besmirching American candy. I hate American candy. What? What are you looking at?
No, I was looking. I can't see anything. There's a glare. Nick told me to look behind.
What?
Billy.
What are you guys
seeing?
I don't see anything either. What
are you? You don't see Michael Myers stand in the window?
No.
No.
Oh.
Oh, it's. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I do see it now.
Oh, we got to do the Michael Myers challenge. Can you hear me? Or Michael Myers, I mean, whoever that may be. We'll do the Michael Myers challenge. Basically, he's going to come at me with a knife, and then I'm going to try to, like, get in the elevator.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. That sounds like a good game. Keep that mustache on there, guy. Okay.
I'm so scared my mustache came off. Look at this guy.
I see him now. Okay, he's out there. Yeah, okay, I see
him. Scary.
It. Wow.
Scary.
How about that, though? Razor just hates American candy. Five candies better than any Snickers bar or M&M.
I can't say he's wrong. I've never had these. I mean, honestly, I'm not going to sit here and say.
It kind of makes me want to invade Canada. When you're talking like that, you're talking out of pocket like that.
Should we get in the car and go?
kind of think we should invade as a country right now.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.